We're starting our final shiur on Parshat Shoftim, our third and final shiur on Parshat Shoftim. We're going to review some concepts from the previous two shiurim and then bring them together and add a really beautiful piece that wraps everything up at the end. A concept from Ari that really kind of blew my mind when I heard it over the break in Eretz Yisrael. So we went from Parshat Ekev, we're reaching two shiurim back now. We went from Parshat Ekev, which brought us to Eretz Yisrael, to Parshat Re'eh, which brought us to the center of Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash. And now that we've arrived, we get to Parshat Shoftim. And this first piece is a little bit of my own. Before I even listened to my Rebbe Shirim, I just went and I read through the Parashah. And to me, it was so clear where the Parsha was going. Again, we get to the narrative of Sefer Devarim, that we have to establish ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God of love and a God of Tov, who guides the world with Tov and with love to a place, to a land of Ahava, to a land of Tov. And in the center of that, in Re'eh, is Beit is HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Beit HaMikdash. And then we come to this parasha which opens up, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. And to me, one of the new words that was popping up here and that gets repeated, understandably, throughout the parasha is not just the concept of Shoftim v'Shotrim. It's the concept that what do we have now? What do we have now for the first time? Sharim. This whole journey in Devarim up until this point is about getting deeper and deeper into Anagat Hashem that brings us to Eretz Yisrael and then brings us to Yerushalayim. When we got to Parsha, we reached that center point. And once we've now reached that center point, we now have to hold it. We need to guard it. We need to live there. We need to make that real. And so for the first time, we have Sha'arim. We have gates. We have a community. We have a reality within the context of Eretz Yisrael. And so the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us after having arrived at HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, which was emphasized deeply throughout Parshat Re'eh and certainly in the final paragraphs when it talked about the three times that we come up to HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem on the Shoshu Garim to see Pnei Hashem, is that now we have to guard that, put a fence around that, and not just put a fence around that, but to guide that, to run that land the way that it was meant to be, to run those cities the way they were meant to be. Shoftim v'shodrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. Asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha l'shvatecha v'shaftu et ha'am mishpat tzedek. That's the goal. That's what we're trying to accomplish here. It's asking the fundamental question, once we've arrived at a reality of Beit HaMikdash, how do we create a Jewish society? How do we maintain order? Now that we have Sha'arim, how do we determine how to function inside of those Sha'arim? And the primary answer is Shoftim v'Shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. So that reaches back to two shiurim ago, but it also reaches back to last year as well. And to me, that's one of the reasons why. What did we say last year? One of the through lines of this parsha is leadership. Right? These are two shiurim here. We did this like 10 minutes ago. Right? Leadership. Leadership is one of the primary goals. That you have to establish a court system. That you have a king to run that land, who is a reflection ultimately of Malchut Shamayim. That you have the Kohanim. That you have the Navi, the person who's bringing out the word of Hashem. The people who are Misharet, who are the Misharte Hashem. All of these people, as I think somebody pointed out in the last year as well, that all of these people are a reflection of God, of godliness. They're a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchut. That's what they're supposed to be. As we talked about, that the court system itself, the very laws that govern that land, we talked about this last two shiurim ago, the very laws that govern that land, that they have to come from the Sanhedrin. Where is that Sanhedrin embedded into? Beit HaMikdash. Because the law is a reflection that there's no distinction between church and state. There's no distinction between religion and law. There is only religious law. There's only a law that comes from a place of Emet. It only comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so therefore, the Sanhedrin is embedded into Beit HaMikdash. The Melech is supposed to be a reflection of Malchut Shamayim. We didn't talk about this last year, but that's what a king is supposed to be. Also, totally the polar opposite of the way that we look at Malchut in the outside world. You know, even we have in democratic countries. So you have two candidates, or three candidates, or in the last election, it was started with like 15 candidates, right? But you have you have candidates who you're choosing from, who you think should be the person to lead the country. And how do each of them platform? They get up there and they say, here's what I think for the what is the best for the country. Here's what I want to do. Here's my vision for what this country should be. And we choose, where we can, we choose to elect the person who we think will do the best job, whose vision we think is the best. That is antithetical to the Jewish view of what Malchut is. And that's why very often those people are corrupt and problematic individuals. Because that's not what Malchut is. The way that the deeper Svarim bring out, deeper sources in Chazal bring out what Malchut is, what kingship is, says that Malchut is, the quote, late lay nigarme klum. True Malchut has nothing of its own. The way that it's described by the Svarim is that Malchut is simply a kli. That's what Malchut is meant to be ideally. Malchut is just a kli. That what makes one truly ra'oi for kingship is to the extent that one removes all of one's own inclinations, one's own perceptions of what the world should be, and makes oneself, there is nothing of its own in a kingship. You would think that a king is everything. A king needs to be nothing. A perfect kli by which can receive what? Malchut Shemayim. A true king is meant to be the conduit through which Malchut Shemayim is shown into the world. And that was David HaMelech, the paradigmatic king who removed all sense of self and just went forth to funnel in Malchut Shemayim into the world. You see that very beautifully. This is actually totally not where I wanted to go with the shiur, but it doesn't matter because it's really important. Pass me a Tanakh. One of you go for it. There you go. We talked about, in the last year, we talked about Melech Shaul and how Melech Shaul failed to wipe out Amalek. Does anybody remember, know why Melech Shaul failed to wipe out Amalek? Why didn't he do it? A very simple and very human reason, which is why he wasn't rightly for kingship. Sorry again, this wasn't planned. Let me just bring it up. Hold on one second. He goes through this whole description. There we go. This is in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tadvav. Shmuel said to Shaul, Hashem sent me to anoint you as a king over his people. And he said, I remember what Amalek did and to wipe out Amalek. No. No. I don't have the pasuk on hand. But basically it's the people, that don't want to wipe out the spoils of war, and they want to take it for themselves. And he caves in to the will of the people and doesn't do what he needs to do and wipe out Amalek, and wipe out all that belonged to Amalek, but instead listens to what the people want. Meaning he is a king who is concerned with the will of the people over the will of Hashem. And that is his ultimate downfall. And that's the pasuk that stuck out of my mind, which is I was able to find much more quickly, is in Pasuk Yud Zayin, where Shaul then goes and reprimands him and says, Vayomer Shmuel, halo im katon ata be'einecha roshiv te Yisrael ata? Vim shachachashem lemelech al Yisrael. Is this so? Though you may be small in your own eyes, you're the head of the tribes of Israel, and Hashem has anointed you to be king over Israel. His issue was that he wasn't able to fully reflect God's will in this world. And the beauty is that you actually see the exact opposite by David in a story which brings this out fully. I'm not going to struggle to find the psukim offhand right now. But when David HaMelech is trying to get the Aron to Yerushalayim, the Aron is very stubborn. And the Aron won't go to Yerushalayim. Does anybody have, not a Tanakh, but like the Chumash with the Haftarot? Yes. I'm sure you all know that I'm asking for it because it was... Yes, it was just this past week, the Haftarah. Yeah. So it's the... No, of Shmini. It's the Haftarah of Shmini. This week is Tashvi'a Mitzora, so last week was Shmini. Yeah, last week, Shmini. You're correct. You're 100% right. So David HaMelech goes, and he's singing and dancing and bringing the Aron back to Yerushalayim, right? And he's singing and dancing with such fervor and such joy that it's that which gets the Aron to go back. However, there's one person who is displeased with the way that Melech David displays himself. Who is that? Michal, who? Because what does Michal say? What is her response? She says, "Vayashav David levarech et beito, vateitze Michal bat Shaul likrat David vatomer, ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael asher nigla hayom leinei amot avadav, ki higalot niglot achar arekim." How honored was the king of Israel today, who exposed himself today in the eyes of his servants, maidservants, as one of the boors might expose himself. I don't know what a boor is, but that's the way he translated it, right? How lowly are you, the way you were singing and dancing out there like a fool? And David responds, "Vayomer David al Michal, lifnei Hashem, before God." So he says, "Lifnei Hashem asher bachar bi me'avicha mikol beito letzavot otzi nagid al Hashem al yisrael v'sichakti lifnei Hashem." Before Hashem, who chose me over your father and over his entire household to appoint me as ruler over the people of Hashem of Israel, before Hashem did I rejoice. Unikaloti od mizot, vaiti shafal beinai, vim haamahot asher amart amam ikaveda. Had I myself even more lightly than this, and had I been lowly in my own eyes, right? The flip side of that pasuk. You catch that? From the way that Shaul saw himself. Had I seen myself lowly in my own eyes, and with the maidservants with whom you spoke, among whom I will be honored. And the response to that is that Michal didn't have any children. And what's beautiful about that is that David recognizes that the Avodat Hashem that was necessary in that moment was to do what?
Sing.
To sing and dance his heart out. And there are midrashim that embellish on this tremendously. And anybody who comes out against people who sing and dance with their heart out, don't know Chazal. And don't know what Malchut is. Because he sings and dances his heart out before there were no Hasidim yet. This is David HaMelech. He's singing and dancing his heart out, and that's what draws the Aron to Yerushalayim. And Michal says, "How dare you make yourself so lowly?" Which unfortunately people say today also. How dare you? How could you put yourself forth like that? And he says, "No, that's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants." And it's Michal, the daughter of Shaul, who's concerned with what? The perception of the people. And it's David, Melech Yisrael, who's concerned with the perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is a Melech. They are simply reflecting Ratzon Hashem in the world. Lately, Megar Meklum. He has nothing of his own. David HaMelech is the paradigmatic king. That was a nice thing, tangent. Okay, we have the court system, which again is embedded into Beit HaMikdash, and therefore we talked about in the first year on Parshat Shoftim how it's a reflection of Ratzon Hashem, and that it's showing that even when they are making their own halakhic rulings, it is because God commanded them to be the ones to make the judgments. It's coming from Hashem because it's coming from Beit HaMikdash. We have the king, who is supposed to be a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have the Kohanim, who were actually physically, literally dedicated to be God. They are His. They are God's portion. They don't even have a place in Eretz Yisrael because their Nachala is Hashem. And you have the Navi, who is the one who is literally putting forth Devar Hashem. Those are the leaders of the people. When you create a society, once now that we've gotten to Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash, you now have Sha'arim. How do you create a Jewish society? This is how you create a Jewish society. It's premised on a system of definitive leadership, but leadership that from different facets bring forth Ratzon Hashem. It's premised on a society where the leaders of the people are working to ensure that every aspect of society reflects godliness. And that's the goal. And that's what truly, in my mind, unifies literally every aspect of this parsha together. It took me a while to come to this, because like we said, there's a list of, what, like 15 things here? Watch it happen now. You need a court system. What's the first thing it talks about doing? Remove Avodah Zarah. There can't be any Avodah Zarah in your midst. Remove any of that negativity. If there's an individual who is an idol worshiper, who's a Jew, it doesn't matter. What is definitionally a Jewish society? How do we make this a society which is a reflection of godliness? You remove idols. If you have an idol worshiper, you put him to death. You appoint a king, Kohanim, Navi. If you have a Jewish society, if somebody accidentally kills somebody else, you don't just let people run wild and kill them. There are sanctuary cities that have to be set up. There need to be Ari Miklat. In order that there's never anybody killed for the wrong reasons in the context of Eretz Yisrael. Asagas Gvul. Respect the borders that you have. There's no infringing of one person's property into another person's property. Edim and Edei Sheker. If you're going to have a court system, it has to function. You need to know, how do you testify that something happened? How do we know the Emet? How do we know the truth? Can't just be one person, it has to be two or more. And if two people conspire to undermine that court system, they better beware. Because whatever it is that they intended for their fellow will come back onto their heads. The next four pieces are where things get a little bit more tricky. First, we'll link them into this piece, and then we're going to deal with them on their own. I still think it fits into that theme. When you're going out to war, so you think, okay, now we're switching gears in this parsha, and what we're doing seems to be dealing with issues of war. Where does war take place? Outside of the Sharecha. So that was something I struggled with a little bit. What I think that's happening here is, no, this part doesn't happen outside. Who does not go out to war? Meaning, when you're getting ready to go to war, you gather together all of your people, and you clarify who will be the ones to leave and who are going to stay and maintain a reality of what needs to be in Eretz Yisrael. That happens inside your Sha'arim. The decision, this isn't necessarily about going to war itself in my mind, the question of seeking shalom, of seeking peace with the other nations, but wiping out all of the nations that live in the land. That you have to wipe out the Canaanim, but anywhere you go beyond that, you first make overtures of peace and only go to war if they won't return that peace, if they won't accept that peace and what comes along with that. But those are decisions to me that come about in the context of your cities. You're determining, when are we going to leave those borders? Who are we going to go to war with, and how are we going to go to war? When we go out to that war, not to cut down those fruit trees, and then swinging back around to Eglah Rufa, if you find somebody who died inside of one of your cities, or between two of your cities, dealing with the realities of that in the context of Eglah Rufa. And I think that's really what's happening here. I think the parashat Shoftim v'Shoftim Titenecha v'Chol Sha'arecha is that you now have Sha'arim. How do you create a Jewish society? And this is the fundamentals of how you create a Jewish society. Who runs it? To make sure that people are running it are reflective of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. And on the flip side, and this was the other thing that jumped out at me, though, in terms of just a word that kept coming out, and the content that kept coming up again and again throughout the parasha, take a look at this, is that their goal in being there is to make sure that there is nothing rotten inside of that society. There is nothing antithetical to what Judaism is inside of that society. And so what keeps on, it's an incredible phrase, it's a very strong phrase that comes up again and again and again throughout the parasha. Open up with me, we're going to flip a lot of pages. Perek Yud Zayin in Parshat Shoftim. We talk about an idol worshiper. That the goal of removing the idol worshiper in the final pasuk in that paragraph, Perek Yud Zayin pasuk Zayin. Yad ha'idim tiyabo barishna lahamito v'yad kolam ba'achorona uvi'arta hara mikirbecha. And you shall burn out the evil from your midst. The first word that struck me is the concept of Mikirbecha. But that's the point, is now you have a Mikirbecha. You now have a society. You have something you have to maintain. And the way that you maintain that is that there are times you have to burn out the Ra that's there. And then this instance is the idol worshippers. You keep going. This keeps coming back again and again. If you have somebody who goes against what the Sanhedrin determines, Pasuk Yud Bet, all the way at the end of the Pasuk. Read the Pasuk. Va'isha sher yaseh b'zazon nevel tishmo ala kohen omid l'sharet sham et Hashem Elokecha o ala shofet. A person who goes against the words of the shofet. Umeit ha'isha, who you have to kill that person. Now, you could have just said you have to kill that person because you need to maintain order. And so if somebody goes against the psak of the Sanhedrin, you have to maintain order. No. Uvi'arta haram Yisrael. You're burning out that negative space within Yisrael, within Klal Yisrael. Continuing to go forward. Perak Yutet Pasuk Yud, in the context of Ari Miklat, it warns us, make sure you have Ari Miklat, because if you don't have Ari Miklat, v'lo yishafech dam naki bikerev artzecha. You shouldn't have any clean blood spill within the context of your land, because we now have a Bikir Becha that we have to maintain. And if on the flip side, the person killed somebody intentionally, skipping to Pasuk Gimel, Yisrael, burning out that blood from Yisrael. By Edim Zomimin, in the next paragraph, by witnesses who conspire against people, Pasuk Yotet, Vasitzem lo kasher zamam la'asot la'achiv. You should do to those witnesses what they intended to do to that person. Why? Uvi'arta harami kirbecha. Be, in order that, next pasuk, Vanisharim yishmeu v'yira'u v'lo yosifu la'asot od kadavar hara azeh bikirbecha. And on. And then finally with Egla Rufa, which closes out the parasha. Right, and what is Egla Rufa? Egla Rufa is a situation where you have a body that's unidentified, that's found between two cities. So you take the two closest cities and they measured out the distance between those cities. Because the city that was closest should have been responsible to take care of that person. It shouldn't have been that there was a person who had nowhere to go and was totally unidentified and nobody was caring about them, and that somebody could have died so close to their city. And in order to get kapara, they go and they walk down a heifer, an ox, an egla, to that place, to a place where nothing has ever grown and nothing can grow on that land. And there's a declaration that's made by the heads of that city, and they axe the back of the egla's neck, egla rufa, that's what it means, the axed heifer. They axe the back of its neck, and somehow that cleanses that blood that was shed from Yisrael. That's the end of the parasha here, last psukim. Pasuk zayin, chaf aleph zayin. Va'anu va'amru, yadenu lo shafchu et adam hazeh ve'ninu lo ra'u. They have to go and say, our hands have not spilled this blood and our eyes did not see. Kaper le'amecha Yisrael asher padita Hashem ve'al ditein dam naki bekerev amecha Yisrael ve'it kaper lehem adam. Atone for your people, Israel, that you have redeemed, O Hashem. Do not place innocent blood in the midst of your people, Israel. Then the blood shall be atoned for them. But you shall remove the innocent blood from your midst when you do what is upright in the eyes of Hashem. And to me, that, as always, the concluding pasuk brings to a close everything that the parsha was setting out to accomplish, which is that you need to go and make sure that there isn't anything in your midst that's negative, that there's no blood that's lost, there's nothing corrupt in the land, that you burn all of that out, that you remove all of that, to maintain a society that is truly dedicated and connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's being run by Yad Hashem, that's a reflection of Malchut Shemayim, and that anything that's antithetical to that is listed in this parasha gets removed by those people who are in charge of those cities. That's how you maintain, that's Shoftim v'Shoftim Tenecha b'chol Sharecha, that's Mishpat Tzedek. The Rebbe adds one more layer. Like I said, there's a little bit of a struggle at the end here. Everything everything is pretty clear and internal until this point. But the last four topics seem to go in a particular direction and then take a sharp turn. First is in the final four topics are, there's a description of the people who, when we go out to war, they don't go out to war. We talked about this 2 times ago. Who doesn't go out to war? Who's not? Who doesn't go out to war when we go out to war against another nation? Somebody who just got married. But no, somebody who is about to get married but has not yet gotten married. Somebody who's planted a field but hasn't seen it come to fruition. Somebody who's built a house but hasn't been menchaik the house yet. They're not allowed to go out to war. And then again, still seemingly following the theme of war, the concept of going out and whenever you decide to go to war, that you make sure to offer peace first. And only if they don't accept peace, then you go and fight them. Except for the Canaanites, the Canaanim, them you have to wipe out. There is no opportunity for peace with the people who have lived in that land. They're too corrupt. You can't let them stay there. Then we have, okay, and when you go out to war, and you now know who you're going out to war against, we know who can go, who we're fighting against. Now we're in the war. What do we do? There's this imperative, this seemingly odd imperative of all things to single out, that when you go to war and you siege a city, whatever you do, don't cut down a fruit tree and use a fruit tree in your siege of the city. Okay. So what's the theme here? War. It's war. Clearly war. And that's what goes into the next parasha. What's the next parasha? Ki tetzei lamilchama. It couldn't be more obvious. The connection between the two parashot is that we end off with the concept of war. And then we go into the parasha, which is Ki tetzei lamilchama loivecha. What's the problem? What did we skip over? Egla Rufa doesn't make any sense in that. Egla Rufa has nothing to do with war. And so that pattern seems to be incorrect. So if it's not about war, then what is it about? Here says something very profound. Let's come back to Egla Rufa and from Egla Rufa work backwards instead. What is Egla Rufa about? You find this person who died between two cities and you go, you measure it out, and you bring this Egla Arufa to a spot. And on that spot is where you're going to access tech. And what's the nature of that spot? It has to be a place where, what do we say? Deserted. Totally deserted, where nothing ever had grown and nothing ever will grow. That somehow is going to cleanse the bloodshed. So Chazal say, why do you need to kill the Egla Ruf in a place where you have not and cannot produce anything? It says, since you did not give this person a chance to be fruitful and produce new life, so too will you do this in a place where there is no potential for new life. That's why you kill the Egla Rufa on that spot. Rabbi says from this, that's the point. That this tells us what the end of the parasha was really about. The end of the parasha wasn't really about war. It's telling us about the nature of what Eretz Yisrael is. About what the nature of our reality and living within Eretz Yisrael is about. It's telling us that Eretz Yisrael is a land of life. That it's Eretz HaChaim, concepts we talked about all the way from the beginning of the Devarim. That Eretz Yisrael is inherently a land of life. It's the source of life, as we talked about 2 shiurim ago. It's the source of life for the entire world. It receives its life force first, and the whole world is gaining its life force from Eretz Yisrael. And everything you feel it, if you've ever been to Eretz Yisrael, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, hopefully you feel it. Just existing there in Eretz Yisrael, you feel alive in a different way. And if you don't, I would challenge you to open yourself up to it. You feel alive in Eretz Yisrael in a way that you don't feel anywhere else. There's an electricity in Eretz Yisrael that you don't feel anywhere else. And it manifests itself in many ways. There's perhaps no more charged place in the entire world than Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. The energy of the world is emanating from, the life force of the world is emanating from the land. So the world is fighting over that spot. The world is fighting over Eretz Yisrael, a sliver of land the size of New Jersey. There's so many things that we could argue about. So many people who have quote-unquote no place to live, there are many, many places to live around Eretz Yisrael. That sliver of land doesn't need to be the issue. But everybody inherently understands that there is something unique and special about Eretz Yisrael, and that it's a land of life, it's the source of life, it's the root of everything that exists. It's the root of our reality in this world. And the whole goal of Eretz Yisrael is to enhance life and to produce life. And so the context in which this parsha talks about war, it's not talking about war per se. This parsha is talking about how to establish a society within the context, well, in the context of Eretz Yisrael, and maintain what Eretz Yisrael is, as we talked about for the whole first half of this year. But what is that we're burning out that ra, ubi'arta ra mikirbecha, in order to make this a place of life, to maintain that it is a land of life, that it's an Eretz that reflects the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that godliness and the He who is the source of a life can be manifest in that land. And therefore, when you go out to war, who is not allowed to go and fight that war? People who are standing on the brink of producing new life. You can't send somebody out to war when they're about to get married and start a family. You can't send somebody out to war when they're about to bring their house up to fruition. You can't send somebody out to war when they're going and they're about to mechanech their field. These are people who are on the precipice of producing new life. They don't go out to war. When you go out to war, you first look to make shalom. You look to make peace with those nations. Because we're a land of life. We're a people of life, not a people of death. And the only people that you don't dare seek peace with first are the Kana'anim, the people who are currently living in Eretz Yisrael and are blocking that source of life, who are covering up that source of life. What did you say? As we've talked about, yes, in my mind I went all the way back there, but we're over time, so I wasn't going to go that far. Yes, you are 100% right. That's a perfect linkage. But the Kana'anim, who are covering up and distorting and blocking off the reality of life. What Elior was pointing out was that, as we talked about before, that in Parshat Arayot, in Parshat Achrimot, next week's Parsha, in our cycle of the Parshiot, it talks about all of the Arayot, but prefaces it by saying, don't do like these two people, because these two people are people of Arayot, and those people are Mitzrayim and Canaan. What is Arayot by definition? Arayot is the improper channeling of life force. Not producing life, not producing life force in the way that it's meant to go. So the Kana'anim are that peel, that klipa, that shell over Eretz Yisrael. There's no peace to be had with them. They need to be wiped out to bring out the life of Eretz Yisrael. When you go out to war, why this one specific prot? Because this is exactly relevant to our parasha. When you go out to war, don't you dare cut down a fruit tree. Because when we go to war, we're going out to war to preserve the life of Eretz Yisrael and its giving of life, and destroying life on behalf of Eretz Yisrael is a contradiction in terms. Don't you dare cut down a fruit tree when you're going to war on behalf of Eretz Yisrael. And then finally culminating in Egla Rufa, which is what where we started from to understand what this whole concept was about. That if a single person dies anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, we have to take responsibility for that life and remove any semblance of death, responsibility for death relating to us. Because Eretz Yisrael is Makor HaChayim, Eretz Yisrael is the source of life. And so all connectivity to death has to be removed. And that to me is how it would tie all of these various aspects of the Parsha together. From the three shirim that we had, Shoftim v'shochim titen lacha b'chol sharecha, v'shavtu atam mishpat tzedek. That now that we've come to Eretz Yisrael in these previous four parshiot, now we have sharim, we have cities, we have Eretz Yisrael. How do you create a Jewish society? You appoint leaders who are reflective of godliness to maintain an Eretz Yisrael that is a reflection of godliness, and God Himself is the Makor HaChayim, He is the source of all life, and therefore, if they are properly maintaining Eretz Yisrael, they are bringing out the fact that Eretz Yisrael is a source of life. These people are the guards, they're the Shoftim and the Shotrim, they're the Melech and the Navi and the Kohen, they're the leaders who are making sure, they're standing there at the gates, making sure that we live up to what it means in Eretz Yisrael, which is to live as a people of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and live Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz HaChaim. As we mentioned two shiurim ago, the bracha that we say in Shmona Esrei, Bezrat Hashem, we should see a kibbutz galiot in our days, a return to Eretz Yisrael, and the immediate response to that being the return of Mishpat Tzedek in our midst, the return of judges, the return of Nevi'im, the return of Malchut, the wiping out of Amalek, the establishment of the Beit HaMikdash from here Abi Amenu, and through that, shining forth a society that reflects true godliness and brings out only the essence of Chaim, both in Eretz Yisrael for the Jewish people and the entire world. Bezrat Hashem.